Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I have great guests with me, Mr. Paul Allen, and yeah, we're going to talk some Kenpo and get into his journey and whatever else that we decide that we're going to talk about. So, yeah, we are... I always like having lesser known people on the show so that we get kind of all different perspectives. And, you know, we all have a different, you know, a story to share and a story to tell. So, if you could go ahead and tell me and your listeners how you got started in Kenpo and the martial arts. You know, we've talked before and had some experience with some other things as well. So, but yeah, where did your martial arts journey start, and where did it all go from there?
Yeah, thanks, Reggie. I have always really had an interest in action movies, and I guess growing up in the seeing some of the big action movies in the 90s, big Schwarzenegger fan, Stallone, Chuck Norris was a big one for me. Close family friends sort of put me onto him, and started watching those movies, and they were really pretty cool. And going through high school and things like that, I was used to sort of play around a bit, and a bit of pushing around, sort of, kicking each other's shins and things like that, seeing a bit of a stupid tough guy type thing. But I don't know, I've always been really sort of right into it, and eventually got on to from some of the earlier Chuck Norris movies, got on into some of the Bruce Lee movies, and again, continue with a lot of the action type stuff. Never actually joined a school until it was probably about 14 or 15 years ago. So I'm in my mid 40s at the moment. But so from that point of view, I'm a bit of a late starter. But I came across a school not too far away from the from where we lived at the time, and that was concentrating on a Chinese style of kung fu, and that was really enjoyable. I got right into that. It was every at the end of every lesson, drenched in sweat. My flexibility improved significantly. There were some of the traditional Chinese weapons available. We didn't actually end up, I didn't end up using them, but I only got a couple of belts in. I was only there for about 18 months or so. But at the time, I had taken a break from my main career. I work in IT. And I had gone back to do some more study. And at the time, when you're studying, a little bit of extra cash every now and then is always helpful. So I one night, having dinner with my wife, we passed by the local pizza shop, and there was a note in the window saying delivery drivers wanted. And my wife said, "Hey, you should go in and talk to the guy." And so I did, and had a word, and I eventually got the job as a delivery driver. I was delivering pizzas around sort of the local area, and it was pretty cool. A bit of extra money while you're studying doesn't hurt. And what I didn't know at the time was that the owner of the pizza shop he studied Kenpo, and he told me one night, you have to watch this movie, okay? It will change your life. They were his words, and sure enough, the movie was The Perfect Weapon. And so I got hold of that and watched that. And I think, I don't know, quite possibly either just that opening sequence of, I think it's a bit of a combination of like long four and or yeah, form it's a five, maybe?
If I remember correctly, it's a combination of four and five, and there's a little bit of a kind of a tribute to the Goju Ryu, Lou Angel,
that's right.
Mr. Speakman threw in kind of the middle of the two. But yeah, if I remember correctly, bits and mostly four and five.
Yeah, I mean, it was very impressive, and I know from the kung fu that I was doing, it was very. This was a very very regimented timing type of art where you see a lot of karate similar to that. I think where it's very beat. Whereas the sequence was obviously very flowing in that opening scene of Perfect Weapon, but. Anyway, so I watched the movie and back at work one night we the pizza shop owner was telling me more about it and his instructor, and his instructor is of course, you know, one of your former guests, Mr. Peter Taz, and I met Peter as a customer of the pizza shop. I took his order a few times and eventually found out that one of the pizzas is actually named after him, which is pretty cool. But as you would, if you're with your Kenpo instructor, you're gonna do that. So Colin eventually convinced me that I should give it a go, and I did. And you know, Monday nights, we'd turn up. A few of us would turn up over at Mr. Taz's place, and he had his garage all set up, all the mats down, and. For a couple of hours every Monday night, we'd go at it, and that was about 13 years ago or so, and I'm still going, and in that time there's been a lot of people come and go, and but we one thing that really kept me was we would. Do our warm-ups. So there were a variety of belts, 35 or six of us, but as a low-ranking belt at the time, I think the highest belt might have been a sort of second brown, maybe first brown, early on. And so as part of the warm-ups, we'd do all the forms up to the form that the highest ranking person was up to. So. And I think Mr. Taz went on and did the next one after that. Seeing all that, like you go through the forms that you know, and then you sort of drop off, and the other higher ranks would continue doing their forms, and you'd see what's sort of coming next. You know, it's like a preview of the next belt type thing, and seeing all like is very intricate, and I still am. At a point where I'm looking forward to learning form four, for example. Currently I'm third brown, but it's great. And we'd do those forms, and then we'd set up a technique line. We just pan it all out. You know, different people, different sizes, different heights, strengths. Some people were flexible, some were very, very tense. So it was great, and I was hooked. I was hooked from there.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, I totally can relate. I got started in Kenpo from seeing The Perfect Weapon. Much like you, going back, I was always watching all the various martial arts movies and. Just always excited about wanting to be a part of the martial arts. I didn't get a chance to start until I was a teenager, but trying to mimic all the moves and kicking each other, kicking my friends and kicking my brothers and things like that. I did the same and saw The Perfect Weapon, and it's like, yeah, I got to get into that, and sought out a school, got started, and just been enjoying the journey ever since. Just wanted to run back a little bit on that first Kung Fu style. That do you recall kind of the specific style that it was? Just kind of curious.
I think from memory, use the they used like a five animal Kung Fu type style. There was a lot of, I know, look, it was called the Shaolin Academy, something like that, nearby. And I'm not sure. It had a fairly decent history, I think. It seemed to be very encapsulated, though. So the guy that was running it was just sort of him, and really, yeah, well, his teacher was so-and-so, so I'm not sure necessarily how, but it was also just a like a one-man shop type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like there weren't any other schools of that brand around. It was just this guy. So I'm not 100% convinced of the how genuine it necessarily was, but it was certainly a start, and it also got me into, as Mr. Taz kept on telling me, it got me to form a lot of bad habits that I needed to undo. So there were some very wide stances and things like that, and your feet might be turned out and things like that. Obviously with Kenpo, so your feet need to be sort of parallel most of the time in a lot of the stances you have, and weight distributions, just the general motion of Kenpo, where it's very thoroughly explained and studied in Kenpo, and this other style didn't quite have that. I don't know. It was like, you know, the foot in the door, if you like, for me. So I don't think it was ever meant to be a thing, but
mm-hmm.
five animal kung fu, something like that.
Okay, gotcha. And so, you know, once you got into Kenpo, you never looked back at the other style, and didn't have any aspirations to you know, get back into training in that at all, or?
No, I left that and turned my back on that, and never turned. So it's been Kenpo all the way. Since then, I haven't done any other styles. The only other thing I've really gotten into is the Paxual Arts with Mr. Ed Parker Jr. So I've been doing that for a little while, a bit over a year now. So that's interesting. It's an interesting complement to Kenpo. On that.
Very nice, very nice. So as of this recording, I did speak with Mr. Parker. And we did talk a little bit about that. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, kind of what are your thoughts on it, or you know, what's been your experience with that?
Well, my experience with that so far is currently it's all online, and I'm located in Melbourne, Australia. So, Ed is in. Parker's in Oregon, not the best time difference. A bit like you and me, perhaps. It's midnight for me here, and I think it's about 7 a.m. for you. So, you know, what do you do? But it's the courses that he and his wife have developed are very thorough. They're very well thought through. It is so far there's been the focus has been on philosophical aspect of the peaceful arts, you could say, because, you know, Paxual, like I might have explained it to you, but, you know, martial arts originates sort of from Mars, the god of war. Paxual arts originates sort of from the god of peace, Pax, the Paxual arts, martial arts. But the one thing that really grabs me and I think is very, very important about it, they touch on it in one of the earlier lessons, and that's about a if you consider any sort of conflict to have like a threat score. So if you have a threat meter, from 0 to 10, you might have 0 to 5 is Paxual arts. You got 5 to 9 is martial arts. 9 and 10, well, that's like that's survival, basically. You need to, where there might be guns or not knives involved, and that's a life death situation. But we tend to go, or at least from a Kenpo point of view, or a lot of other martial arts, to one way to diffuse a potential conflict. Yes, you can use you can punch your way out of it, or kick your way out of it, or, you know, five swords this or whatever. But it doesn't have to be the first step. Like, you can, obviously, you're down towards that threat score of 0. You can talk your way out. Okay, early on, you can talk your way out. As it moves along, you can diffuse the situation physically by moving yourself from the situation, or you can. There are some good examples of Parker has done, and some of the physical aspects we haven't actually touched on yet. So I can't really give you a good example on it, but it's almost where you're making the person think that they might be tripping over or something like that. Yeah, you might just be touching them here and there, and just changes their momentum from their movements, and they fall over, or they lose interest in the conversation. The argument or the whatever happens.
Yeah, I get the sense that it's starting off in it, there's much more of a mental side to it, much more of a situational awareness and environmental awareness, and, you know, like you said, not just immediately going into, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna punch this person and do that, but you know, talking and thinking and rationalizing a situation so that it doesn't have to, you know, escalate to a physical fight.
That's right. Like a classic example would be, okay, we're coming, you know, we're getting close to like the Christmas period now, and people, you know, families meet together, you have family gatherings and things like that, and, you know, quite often there might be some alcohol involved, and the example of you know, drunk Uncle Bob, a family member who might be, you do a bit of karate, do you? Well, you know, show me this or that, or they start to get a little bit violent, but you don't necessarily want to maim them in front of your family members, or really do give them or harm them anyway, because they're part of the family. You know, they're not actually a threat. They might just be under the influence. So there are situations like that where things like Kenpo doesn't really, or any martial art doesn't really train for. So it's about diffusion of, I guess, those sort of situations.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, as you've been going through it, are there any sort of, you know, techniques or things like that, or we're still you're still in the, you know, in kind of the mental side of it, or is there any kind of quote unquote traditional type, you know, techniques in it so far that you've been?
There are, it has only been at the moment very, very much focused on the mind module at the moment. You've got mind, body, soul, and mind. There are different sections of that. We've mainly been focusing on the philosophy section of that, and which talks about all sorts of things from the different types of values that people might have, how that may translate to their actions or reactions to things. Talking about interpretations and perspective. Self-awareness primarily. There are all sorts of these philosophical aspects of that, which are you can't pull that card out and use it on the street if you like, but it's there. It is an art, and there is some of the aspect of that similar to a lot of Kenpo, I guess. There is a lot of theory in Kenpo, and we've only been really working on theory. Looking forward to doing some of the more physical stuff. Hopefully it'll come up.
Mm-hmm. Now, in relation to the Kenpo, have you been able to apply the, you know, the principles and philosophies, or has that changed how you do Kenpo at all, or do you see, you know, where it can connect, or how things may kind of change since you started that?
Look, I think it's a little bit like just the concept of putting different hats on for different situations. So you might be driving your car, and you might drive it completely different when you're by yourself compared to, say, if you've got all your kids in the car, right? Your actions inside the car might be completely different. Mine certainly are. And you, from that point of view, you react differently to a situation. So, I'm not suggesting that I would necessarily put myself more at risk if I was by myself, but when you've got others that you're looking after, or there's other perspectives of a situation that you need to keep in consideration, you're going to change the way that you behave, or that you react. And I guess from that point of view, you can take off. Okay, this is a situation where talking is not actually going to do any good. So I'm not going to, that threat meter is already up to like a six. So you can't talk your way out of it. So that's already out off the table. So then you get yourself into Kenpo mode, and then hopefully it doesn't go any higher than that. So obviously, if it gets to the maximum level, then you're probably in deep trouble. Someone. So look, as they say, the best way to win a fight is not beat.
Exactly. So looking at we had kind of talked about this before, but the landscape of martial arts schools in Australia there, you know, kind of what is the layout? So in the States here, in, you know, the bigger, the more populated areas, you know, you have a martial arts school on every corner, pretty much, and There's kind of a really abundance of choices in a lot of places and a lot of different styles, and is what is kind of the layout where you're at is, you know, are there a lot of different choices, or is kind of more limited, or how is it like?
I think there's always been a connection to martial arts in Australia, probably from around the 1960s or so. I know one of the he's known as the father of karate in Australia, Mr. Tino Severano. I had the honor of meeting him one night, and it was quite special. He was one of his guests on his podcast, but he that was like a goju, something like, I can't remember the exact style. I know that there were a lot of styles or karate clubs and things like that around, you know, jujitsu, that type of thing. I think with the expansion or the growth of MMA, you see a lot more very fitness related and more high intensity, almost not gyms, but like there are lots of gymnasiums around, but as far as you see a lot more MMA around, I think, rather than your more traditional styles. A lot of the styles you do see, I guess, there's a lot of taekwondo and various other karate styles, but there seems to be, from my observations anyway, it looks as though there's a big gap between, you got a lot of schools that cater primarily for kids, other schools that cater for more sort of older people. So some of the MMA type stuff or Brazilian jiu-jitsu is more, seems to be a bit more targeted to younger adults. As far as Kenpo goes, there's not a lot of schools in Australia for Kenpo, unfortunately. Not exactly sure why that is, but I know there's always been a lot of politics with Kenpo, and I think some of that has occurred in Australia, which has prevented from perhaps growing it as it could have. But in a way, I guess it ultimately means that Kenpo schools, yeah, in Australia are fairly high quality. Mr. Taz's school, which had to unfortunately close over COVID, that was very successful, very high quality school. We had a lot of great students, and great opportunities there. So, in Melbourne, there's maybe a handful of sort of smaller schools. There's maybe one or two in Sydney, similar again in Brisbane and Adelaide. So, compared to the States, yeah, certainly not Kenpo schools. But as far as martial arts goes, yeah, there's, if you wanted to study a martial art, there'd be, yeah, if you were to look in your general suburb or your suburban area, you'd be looking at maybe five choices, different arts.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not on every corner.
Gotcha. So to give a shout out to Peter Taz and his show, the Mind Sensei podcast, he has talked to a lot of big names in Kenpo, and he kind of knows everybody in Kenpo. So has any of that, have you had the opportunity to kind of reap the fruits of his connections, and as far as meeting some of, you know, these very various legends and big names in Kenpo. You know, have you had a chance to meet a lot of these people or you know, train with them and work with them at all?
I have been lucky enough to meet some of them. Yes, I know before I started with as I know he'd already travelled a fair bit and met a lot of people, and but even while he had the school running, he did go on the occasional trip overseas to meet up with people, and he's got plans of well, so I have had the opportunity to meet some big names out here that he's brought out, or I know, well, there was a seminar with his former instructor he's under Speakman. I was able to meet Mr. Speakman once. That was okay. And Mr. Taz's instructor, Mr. Graham Lelliott, I've met him a couple of times. He's a really nice guy. He was promoted 10th last year. He's been out to Australia a number of times with Pete Valdez, who works fairly closely with him at times. Mr. Lee Wedlake, met him a couple of times. It's been really good. Marty Zdenovic, he's been out. Again, they're all really nice guys. They're very nice guys. I had the opportunity to meet them again, as well as some others. I attended Mr. Lelliott's Wonder Valley camp back in 2013, over in California. So that was an amazing experience. It's a camp that that everyone in Kenpo should probably attend at some point. Graham and Jadine are the most welcoming people around. You meet Kenpo people from around the world. And my plans are to attend again next year. So I'm trying to work out the logistics of doing that, and that usually occurs around the Memorial Day weekend over in California. So, but yes, no, I've been able to meet a lot of people from Mr. Taz's connections, and he keeps up phone calls, and when he can brings them out here, but obviously that can be it can be expensive to bring someone out halfway across the world, and you know, it's and because, like I said, there's not a huge number of Kenpo schools out here, you're not going to get a huge number of people coming to doesn't so but yeah, it's I have had a lot of good opportunities to meet some amazing people.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm certainly looking into getting. I really have not been to any kind of Kenpo camps or anything like that. So that's definitely on my radar to get more involved with that. And you know, yeah, like you mentioned, it's tough to get around to travel and all those kind of things, but. We get into it where we can and what works, but it's really great that been able to at least get the exposure to these different teachers and all great folks. Had some on the show, and I'm working on getting the others that you've mentioned. So I'm looking forward to speaking with them as well, and just, you know, increasing those Kenpo connections and just learning as much as I can and get exposed to as much of it as I can. So that's nice. So.
Well, yeah, that's it. It's a bit like if you talking to people, you learn so much without necessarily knowing it. You can read a book. You can watch a video. In a way, you could even attend a seminar, but just by talking to people, you probably end up realizing some of the things that you pick up maybe months later, and it's a very valuable thing. And even on like this sort of medium, a lot of the listeners hear things that they may have had their own experiences with some of the people that some of your guests. Put the pieces together, and get a greater learning experience.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I wanted to get with this show is to get the stories and get this perspectives from the source themselves, and so that we can kind of triangulate all these kind of different information, so that there isn't there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding in the Kenpo world, unfortunately, because we're kind of playing the telephone game, and we're just not really we're getting our wires crossed. So to have this place where we can have these people tell the stories directly from themselves, then we can get a clearer picture of where we've been, where we're going, and hopefully connect a little bit more, unify a little bit more in the Kenpo community. And so that's something that I would certainly hope kind of help the healing side of Kenpo and kind of bring us together a little bit more. Everyone has kind of their different ideas of how Kenpo should be, and the old joke of Mr. Parker didn't teach it that way. I hope that we can kind of get away from that and just get more into promoting the art, spreading the art, evolving and growing the art, and less of the infighting and that sort of thing. But
I suppose that that's one thing to keep in mind, that is that it is an art, and with art is all about giving your own expression. It's about expressing yourself in your own way. By understanding the key concepts and fundamentals, you can make the art your tailored to you. It's not a system with a manual that has processes that must follow like this. And I think sometimes a lot of people confuse Kenpo for that because there were so many manuals and instructions written out like that. Whereas taking a step back from it all, at the end of the day, it is an art. And even relearning some of re-practicing a lot of the techniques in some of the lower belts, not like you're not going to. All of those techniques are not necessarily going to be usable on anyone or in a particular situation. Most of them are there to demonstrate some kind of concept or a theory of movement, or to teach you how your body moves in a certain way, or the mechanics of how an opponent will work. And by learning those concepts, you can then adjust your movement, or you can expand yourself by understanding those concepts, rather than following it step by step, do it like this, or all my foot was in the wrong position, so it was wrong. Like, yes, in a grading, you have to be, you have to do what's prescribed, but from my journey anyway, I'm understanding more and more that it's about there's a lesson in every technique, you know, every form or forms, but and those concepts that they're teaching you are for you to try to expand yourself.
Gotcha. So now that you are, you know, in the upper levels of the training, have you been in the teaching side of it? Have you been doing any of that, or working towards getting into the teaching side?
I have taught a few classes here and there. I probably wouldn't consider myself a full-time teacher or instructor. However, that is definitely something that I want to do. I want to immerse myself in the art system, and I want to be able to give back, teach it in a way where others can both enjoy it and make it their own, and expand themselves. So I it is definitely something that I want to concentrate on.
Very nice, yeah.
And yeah, I've had a taste, I guess, taste of teaching it, and yeah, it tastes good.
Yeah, I agree. I like teaching. I like to be able to share what little bit I know with the others, and then, you know, it also helps for, you know, my learning as well. You can
definitely
get a better understanding when you have to try and explain it to someone else, and we all have these different learning styles, so I that's one thing that kind of I forget about from times, is that, oh, well, you know, this person maybe doesn't understand a technique or a movement or a principle or something the same way that I do, because, you know, they don't have the same experience or, you know, the same body type or, you know, whatever that difference is, or just different learning styles. You know, some people need to be able to, they have to do it. Some people can just, you know, see the movement and they know, you know, for some people, you know, you have to write on the board and you know, get that visual side. I'm having fun with it. Looking forward to getting to do more of it in the future. And, you know, one day then I can have people going, oh yeah, he taught me that, and, you know, I'm world champion. No, I'm not interested in doing it for, you know, the recognition or anything. I just love the art and love sharing it. And so hope we can do more of that real soon.
You know, it's definitely something special about knowing that you've made a difference to someone.
Nice. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and move into our lightning round here. So I've got a few questions to throw at you. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Look, I've got a lot of favorite techniques. I think one of my more favorites recently, I really like snapping twig. Just the whole, it's very violent, pretty cool. Like, yes, it's violent. I'm not like pro violence or anything like that, but from a Kenpo point of view, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a fun technique that falls into my what I call my Kenpo All-Star techniques. It's just one of those techniques that seems to exist in every version of Kenpo that I've been exposed to, at least. So you know, your five swords, your thundering hammers. So yeah, stamping twig is definitely in there. And yeah, it's a fun technique. It's, you know, it's brutal. It's got kind of all the things that us Kenpo folks love to do. So yeah, that's a good one. All right. The next one being, do you have a favorite form and or set?
I think my favorite form would probably be short three. I only know up to long three at the moment. Long three is very much growing on me, but I think the flow of the techniques doing short three, and it's just that added challenge by doing it on the left side as well. So we often do opposite way around.
Mm-hmm.
After, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are big fans of short three. I always remember really liking long three. I actually still do, and I think it's mainly because of Blinding Sacrifice. I believe that's the name of the technique. I'm spacing on it at the moment, but I always like the form because of that technique. For that movement is always really, really, I don't know. I always thought it looked cool, but.
It feels good that bit too. Mm-hmm. So,
always like that. I need to do short three on the second side. And that's something in my, you know, current training that I'm not used to is doing things on the second side. And so trying to integrate that in more, just to really work the brain and work, you know, your body and your reflexes and, you know, some of that, getting that muscle memory, I think is pretty important. I know there are folks out there that are like, oh, you don't need to do it on the second side, and you know, we can can debate that for hours on end, but yeah, I think it's good to do them on both sides. So
yeah, and look, with it, a bit like what you're saying about learning styles before, it makes you think about it a different way, and after you do it on the other side, you end up doing the original side better, just because you unpacked it. You've thought a bit more about it from different. You end up doing the original better.
Yeah, get a deeper understanding of it.
Hmm. Yes.
All right. Next one. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Favorite weapon. Look, not really. I've used the single or double stick. A couple of times in class, but I am looking forward to some of the knife techniques, to be honest. Look forward to getting a bit deeper with
it. Yeah, very, very nice.
Watch this space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never really, well, I've been into weapons. I think I'm getting a little bit more into it now than I used to. You know, enjoyed certain stuff. The staff, I've always loved the staff, and spear, three-sectional staff, things like that. But now I'm getting some more interest in knives and things like that. So starting to dip into that more, and excited to get into that a little bit more. All right. Next one. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
I think if anyone, I'd have to go back to my original interests, and it would have to be Chuck Norris. I think in the day, you know, probably in the '80s, I know he was karate champion in the sort of 60s and 70s, but I don't know, in his movie prime, I think that would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, he is a legend for a reason. Yeah, he's done a lot of great things. One of the things that I really love about him, he was in an interview and they were asking him, you know, how did you get to be this champion? How did you get to, you know, win these titles and all these things? And he said something that I really, really love and have really kind of held on to over the years. But he said that he never thought about being the champion or anything like that. He would go to a tournament and he would not think about, I'm going to win this tournament or I'm going to win this match. He would just think of very attainable goals. So he would just think, okay, I'm going to just, you know, win this round or not even scaling it, you know, even deeper than that. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get the first point or I'm going to get the first score. And then, you know, he gets the point. Okay, now I'm going to get the next point. And he would just think of it in those little small bites. And, you know, he'd beat the person and he wouldn't think, okay, well, now I'm going to win the whole thing. No, he would think, okay, I'm just going to think about getting the first point against this person. And he would just keep doing that and getting those little small victories. And then the next thing you know, oh, well, I've won the whole thing. And so I just love that smaller scale view of attainable goals. And, you know, I try to do that in my thing is I just want to just get this small victory. Okay, well, I'm going to get off the couch and go to class today. that's the small victory. And then move on from there.
No, I'm with you there. That applies to everything in life. But I listened to the audio book, his book, Against All Odds. It's a pretty good book. So it's it talks about his life. Like it's he wrote it. So yeah, that's really cool.
Very nice. I like it. All right. So now is your time for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything or say anything that maybe we didn't cover that you'd like to get out there. Now is your time to throw out to the world anything that you'd like to share, and we will then wrap it up from there.
Well, look, I think it's always important to follow your interest, follow your dreams, and especially I was a late starter to all this, and if I had my time again, I would have started when I was 3 years old. I've been doing this since I was 3 years old, but That never happened, but it's never too late. Never too late to start if you are into something. Even if, you know, I've had a few injuries over the years here and there where you think, oh, you know, this is just too painful to go on, or if I get injured, I'm not going to be at work, and all things like that. But at the end of the day, give it a go. You will. The last thing I think anyone would want is to come to their deathbed and wonder, geez, I wonder what it would have been like if I'd tried that. Okay, just give it a go. But if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You give it a go, and you never do.
I like it. Yeah. No. Well said. And yeah, you're never. I like to joke. You're never too old. Start or restart in some of our cases this thing at any age, and you you know, when it's 10 minutes after you're dead is when it's too late. Other than that, you can get started or restarted at any time. So, don't want to, you know, go through life with the regrets of not trying this or not doing something just because it's, you know, scary or whatever, you know, excuse you want to make. So that's good. I like it. So, yeah, I thank you so much for being on with me and telling your story and getting the chat and staying up late for you know, I used to be a night owl and now not so much. So I really appreciate your time for being on, and we'll certainly have to do this again and get into some more things, but yeah, no, thank you so much for being on, and we will talk again soon.
That was my pleasure, Reggie. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.